Hello, beautiful women, and welcome to the Claimed Podcast. I'm Anna Rova, your host, and let me tell you a little bit about myself if you're new to the podcast. I'm a femininity and feminine embodiment coach, and I run a very powerful program for single successful women who want to attract and keep committed masculine men, or women who are already in relationships but want to change that feminine masculine polarity in their relationship. So I have with me today, Astra Joint, my midwife, to come today and to talk with us about birth and midwifery and also a little bit about my birth as well. So Astra, I am delighted and honored that you've joined us. Thank you.
Well, thank you. That's a very sweet introduction.
Well, we're going to talk about your story and midwifery and everything in between. And as you know, I call you the coolest midwife in town because you always wear like awesome jewelry and you have these amazing outfits. You know, I think the shorts are your thing, like colorful. She shows up with, so the listeners can, you know, understand, in like boots. And you have, what's your car? It's a Jeep. It's like a small Jeep.
Yeah, it's a Jimny. Blue Jimny. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, you always wear these like hipster, I mean, crazy kind of shorts and your earrings and all of that. And it's like,
thanks.
You would never say, you know, you're a midwife. And I've had, honestly, Astra, I just want to say that I think what you've done for me, and obviously you're just being you, you know, you've completely shifted not only my perspective, I know, but Strength's perspective around childbirth and who is a midwife and like what do you do and like the whole experience. I still can't, you know, like for me this is now so normal. You know, you came to our home for all of our visits. We were having a bit of wine and, you know, a bit of food and things like that. And, you know, you showed up at my birth in like white shorts and your earrings and like you delivered my baby in that outfit and I'm like, you know, in the bathtub. Like it totally kind of just shifted everything for me. So I just want to thank you for that. And that's why I wanted to interview you and, you know, Heli, the doula and husband and put together an episode, because I think it's just such a different experience to what most women, I'd say, I think that would be fair to say, experience in terms of birth.
Yeah.
Let's begin, I guess, by just telling, I'm just so interested in your story and how did you come to do midwifery? Because, you know, I still can't believe, like, we just chatted in the beginning. And I'm like, how are the births? You said, yeah, I just had three in the last week or 10 days. And, you know, one was quick, one I just made it, the other one was breech. So it's like, I still can't believe and understand how you do this for a job. Like, you deliver babies, like, babies come out of vaginas and, like, you deliver that. So, yeah, tell me more about how did you actually decide or come to this path of midwifery?
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy job. Sometimes I wonder. Look, just to say, you know, it's not what I thought it was going to be either.
Oh, you never wanted, you didn't think you wanted to do this your life?
Like, I didn't know it was going to end up like this, I think. And I also just want to thank you for that great description. I get a real buzz. I'm glad that your perceptions of birth has changed through this experience, because, you know, one of the things I really love about my work, especially now as a privately practicing midwife attending home births, compared to the years I spent in hospital practice, which, you know, not to diss our fantastic medical system and you know, modern maternity system, but yeah, going to home births is so much nicer for me as well. Like, that's the work I really enjoy. I love rocking up in my normal clothes and going, like, that was a real unfolding for me to go, you know, I actually don't have to try and be somebody that I'm not. I'm actually going to just start rocking up to my daily work in ways that make me feel good. And I think it makes me a better midwife and a better person. Just so you know, what you see is what you get. You know, that's who I am. And I think that's part of sort of demystifying the whole thing. That, yeah, you don't have to be wearing scrubs and kind of a ponytail and, you know.
You don't have enough hair. Or do you have enough hair for a ponytail?
Look, I'm getting there.
Yeah, maybe one day.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Like birth is a normal life event, a significant, you know, it's mostly significant, obviously, for the person giving birth and the family. It's a family event. And, you know, we should really feel like we're kind of your professional friend by the time the birth arrives. So there's that wonderful mix of like familiarity and comfort, and that we could kind of just be there and blend in. Or if you need us, you know, we're right there. So we sort of maintain those professional standards, but also, you know, the aim is everything feels so comfortable, because that's how birth works best. Yeah, I came to midwifery. Well, my youngest sister was born at home when I was 10. Mm. So I experienced my next two sisters. So the one after me was born in hospital, and that was in the 80s. And I remember going and looking at her through the glass window, you know, where all the babies were lined up behind the thing. And which one's my sister, you know. And then 2 years later, the next one was born at home, and similar kind of thing. The midwife would just come to our house, and her name was Enid, and she was just having cups of tea. I'd come home from school and be like, hi, Enid. And my mum was like, you know what I mean? It became this really sort of normal thing. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, and then my mum just had the baby, and there was the placenta in the salad bowl. And I was old enough by then, I think, that it kind of made like a really some kind of quite deep subconscious impression. I don't remember thinking, ooh, you know, this is amazing. I was just kind of like, oh yeah, there's having a baby. But it certainly was a lot nicer than going up to the hospital with the weird hospital smells and, you know, missing my mum when she was away for, you know, days and stuff like that. So it really felt like a nice family event. And then, I don't know, it seems so weird, but I was literally in the library when I was like 17. And I just came across this book on the top of a pile of, you know, books to be sorted and put back on the shelf. There was like a photo essay of births. Mm-hmm. And it was all these different births in all these different contexts. And I just started flipping through it and was like, oh, my God. Like I was just instantly drawn to it. I mean, you know, now these days, you know, we've talked about sort of the rise of the birth video and, you know, there's birthing photographs everywhere on the internet now. But, you know, back then in the 90s, you don't see births. You don't see images of people giving birth. So, yeah, I saw this book.
What was fascinating about it? What drew you in?
There was something about just the power. If I think about it, I think the raw power of women giving birth, and I don't know, like the magic and wonder of this kind of private world that's so, I just hadn't seen anything like it. I was just like, what is that? You know, and partners pulling amazing faces, seeing the baby coming out and people crying and just the emotion, just all of it. I was just like, what is that? I want in on those vibes. Yeah, but then, you know, I had my own baby in my early 20s and was sort of waylaid. So then, but from then on, I pretty much just went, I want to be a midwife. Oh, is that what that is? Oh, well, I'm going to do that then. So, yeah, I had that focus. But I think what happens for a lot of us, and I talk to a lot of student midwives about this stuff, is I think what a lot of people think a midwife is really what a doula is these days. So I sort of imagined I would be going to births and providing a supportive, loving atmosphere and massaging and, mm-hmm. you know, giving snacks and being involved in the birth in a much more holistic kind of way, I suppose. So I think the challenging midwifery, then you go off to mid, you know, to uni and become a learn.
Then you're a doctor pretty much.
Oh, God, it's just so full on. The midwifery training is just really intense, and yeah, the amount of stuff you have to know and do, and yeah, it was just it's like walking through fire.
So just so that people get some context, because like I was talking to my sister and she doesn't understand like who, like what is, was there a doctor at your birth?
I'm yeah.
like yeah, you know, like so this whole, I mean,
Dr. Joint.
Yeah, Dr. Joint in her white short shorts and a thing on her head.
The head torch.
Oh my God, I should have taken a photo. I think there is a photo actually of you and the torch. So for listeners who are like, we even have our inside jokes here. With Astra, when I was giving birth, so that for everybody to see. Well, it wasn't dark, right? Like, why did you need the torch? Because
because it was dark.
Oh, it was getting
dark. No, I had it on after. Yeah, it was dark by then. You gave birth just sort of before sunset, really.
Right.
And so by the time we were keeping nice dim lights in the room after you and the baby were in bed, and I was tippy-toeing around because I was trying to write my notes without turning the big light on.
But I remember you put it on to kind of look. Oh, I think you were checking to have a look placenta. At your perineum.
Oh, yeah. To have a look at your perineum and the placenta, because you want to have a really good look. You can't just have a fake half look when you're looking at someone's vagina after birth. You want to make sure you got it. You want one good look. Just one really good look. Yeah. And you don't have to go back there, you know.
These are the perks of your job. Look.
That's people call it the vagina miner, that look with your head torture. One of my midwife colleagues said, you like to be able to see. What would she say? It's good to be able to see when you're working under the bonnet or something like that.
So for everybody listening, just tell us, you know, what does your job entail? So, like, who is a midwife? And I know you worked in the hospital for many years. And I guess maybe you could talk to us, because I'm also curious about that transition, you know. So talk to us, who is a midwife? What's the primary role, whether you're in the hospital or home birth? And then, just your experience in the hospital and then how you decided to transition.
Well, that's a lot. That's about a 10-part question there, Anna.
Two-part. One, who's a midwife? Second.
Who's a midwife?
Yeah.
Well, a midwife is, look, midwives are supposed to be, we are the experts in normal birth. So really, I mean, people think about that they're going to see, there's a lot of, but don't you see a doctor? Look, even in the modern hospital system, maternity system, heaps of women, if they're healthy and well, will never see a doctor through their whole pregnancy, birth and postnatal period. Now, from when the GP refers them in at the start to when they revisit the GP at their six-week postnatal check, lots of them will just see midwives. So we provide kind of the whole of pregnancy care across the spectrum of that childbearing year. And midwives are sort of different things in different settings. Some midwives sort of only work in birthing suite or only work on the postnatal ward after birth or only work in antenatal clinic. But it was very much embedded in my training and from then onwards, probably the last sort of 15, 16 years, there's a big push and a big focus that it's sort of like it's not really that it's important that you are a holistic, that you can work in all areas and that you continue to work across all areas so that you can maintain your skills and, provide the whole.
When you say all areas means like pregnancy, birth, postnatal.
It's kind of not cool to just do one thing. Having said that, heaps of people do because the hours, as you know, even though thank you for conveniently having your baby in the daytime, but the hours of birth are unpredictable and often at nighttime. So for midwives at different stages of their lives, you know, attending births or doing shift work, you know, can be challenging.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, essentially we are the sort of care providers and gatekeepers, you know, of normal birth. And then where we interface with doctors and with the medical system is when some kind of issue complexities arise. Yeah, and then we cross over and quite often we kind of share care with doctors around and work out together who's going to do what and who's responsible for what and what needs to happen. And then in really complex pregnancies, you know, probably the main carer is the obstetrician, but there's always, like, everybody has a midwife. Some people will also have a doctor. So you still, even women having really complex pregnancies, we'll have midwifery care because we still need to talk to them about birth and breastfeeding and emotions.
And is this the system, like, I'm trying to understand because obviously I was born in Eastern Europe. You know, my sister had two cesareans. And in fact, with my first pregnancy with Zoe, you know, I got pregnant in Spain. And for the first 7 months while I was pregnant, I was actually going to see pretty much an obstetrician at a private clinic. I was going there every month having an ultrasound. That was it, you know. So I know that the systems are so different. And so when I think about, you know, I knew when we were coming to Australia, I was actually pleased that I'm coming here because Australia, And now I realize that's actually not the case, but I had in my mind the impression that Australia, well, maybe it is actually, Australia is very much midwife-led and there's this whole, you know, women's business and all that. I was very happy about it. And once I got in here, I actually realized that the system is still medicalized, although the midwives are at the forefront of it. So is it like in the world, you know, and we have listeners, I mean, a lot of women are in the US, for example.
Yeah, it's a different system.
Yeah, give us a picture of like, because I think in a lot of countries, the midwives are not at the fore. It's just the obstetrician. No. That's why my sister is like, what? Who's a midwife, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, look, not even, I mean, here I've been, you know, when you get chatting to taxi drivers and they go, what do you mean you're a midwife? Do they still have them? Like even people in Australia don't know there's any such thing as a midwife. But, yeah, we're here. That's what, that's who's, and a lot of people will call us nurses. And I think that's because, for a long time in Australia, to become a midwife, you had to become a nurse first. So it's like midwifery was sort of seen as a specialisation of nursing. But we've really followed the UK model more than an American model here. Yeah, I think around 2005, it was in New South Wales, early 2000s across Australia in different states, we shifted to the option to do midwifery just as a separate degree. And it became sort of legislatively recognised as a separate, distinct profession from nursing. And so we have now the Nurses and Midwives Board and things like that. So Nurses and Midwives Association. So we're recognised as separate from nursing and as...
Got it. And what about the rest of the world? Like, I mean,
It's different everywhere. Yeah, I mean, medical. Have you read Rachel Reid's book, Reclaiming Childbirth as a Rite of Passage?
No, not her newest book. No.
Amazing. So she really talks a lot about the history of midwifery and medicalization of birth. I mean, it just depends. Look, it's all linked into kind of patriarchal systems, medicine, you know, and the way that midwifery as a sort of female profession, I suppose, is, and even the professionalization of midwifery, you know, in the past we would have learnt from midwifery mentors, you know, wise women in the community or whatever. Whereas now you go to university and you train in a hospital and you learn all these clinical skills and you have to pass all these competencies and jump through lots of hoops to,
So in a lot of, I guess.
So other countries.
Yeah,
it's very, very doctor led. Yeah.
Yeah. So like an obstetrician, a doctor, you go to the hospital and then.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Wow.
Yeah.
What, in Spain,
actually, when I went to Spain a couple of years ago, I was looking at their system and it looks like it's really obstetric led there as well. Yeah. Medical led. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Although in if we talk about Netherlands, right, like Netherlands is a standout country in that sense.
Yes.
I think like what, 70% of women give birth at home or something like that? Like it's just crazy
numbers. I think it used to be. I don't think it is. I thought it might be around 30% now, which is still really high for it would be changing all the time. Yeah. And I mean, what you see around the world is when midwives are the lead carer for birth, the outcomes for women and babies are better.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's just so much good evidence that says that. But, you know, we've got really embedded patriarchal systems. We've got, you know, our kind of group of consumers of our services, childbearing people, are usually busy having babies after they access our services and aren't really out there, you know, to get a really vocal group of people campaigning to change the maternity system is a challenge because everyone's really busy with their kids or being on-call midwives, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you started, I mean, you've spent quite a few years in the hospital just being a midwife there.
Yeah.
And then you decided to transition to home birth, right, and being a private midwife. So tell me more about that. Like I'm curious what made you, you know, make the decision and actually do it.
Well, look, I'd always wanted, that was a plan when I went to uni, you know, I always wanted to be a home birth midwife. Mm. But I think, again, it was part of that process of going, you know, being a midwife actually, because we are working on our own and we are autonomous practitioners, there's this incredible level of responsibility and skill. Like actually there's a whole lot of stuff that you do need to learn and know and experience. So I kind of came out of my degree a bit beaten and feeling actually unprepared. There's no way I could have gone straight into private practice, although I do know people who have, but that wasn't my journey. I was a whole bunch of things. Like the hospital I trained in was a really rough introduction to the world.
In what way?
And I just, oh, the culture was incredibly toxic. There's a lot of bullying in midwifery and nursing, a lot of horizontal violence. There's, you know, the training was just, yeah, rough. And I came out of it with incredibly low self-esteem, nearly quit, actually. I was just like, this is the worst job I've ever had in my whole life. I've never been treated so badly. I'm awake at all these ridiculous hours and I dread going to work. Like, I just hate it. Is it just a, can I swear?
Yeah, please.
No, it's just a shit show. Like, every birth is just a fucking disaster. Everyone's like a near-death experience. Like, what is this? Is this what birth is? Like, you know.
Oh, so it was not only like the politics behind the scenes, but the actual births were
everything. Because it all affects each other and it all works together. It's just like, oh my God. And somehow I stuck at it for a couple of years. I had just always had some, everywhere I've worked, I've just had some really key, amazing mentors. And there's lots of great midwives to look up to if you're a wannabe midwife or a baby midwife, you know. So I kind of just would find my groove and nestle into my little spot. And then I moved from there to another hospital and things got better. So I found some, moved to a different workplace with a much better culture and kind of, I think I too was just stubborn and was like, I worked so hard to get through this degree. I'm not giving up now. Like, I wanted this. And now what am I going to do, you know? And also just, yeah, that rude awakening of like, oh, midwifery's not, you know, rubbing backs and, you know, turning the salt lamp on and getting the playlist going. That's a doula. Oh, midwives have to cannulate and do stitches and, you know how to do CPR. And
well, it's a full, yeah, it's a medical. Like, that's what stuff. In my mind, when I was like, what's a doula? What's a midwife? To me, yeah. And I explained it to String. He's like, why the hell do we need another woman there? We're already paying one. Like, what? You know,
yeah,
I always told him, like, okay, well, you know, the midwife is actually the medical practitioner who's going to make sure me and the baby are okay in terms of, you know, everything. And the doula is there. Although, I don't know, Astra, it didn't seem like Haley. I mean, she was rubbing my back and everything. But as you describe it, it seems like this doula woman is, you know, putting playlists and dancing, like, Haley worked her ass off. I remember she was like rebosing me and I'm like, she's doing that for like half an hour already. I'm like, doesn't she need a rest? And then she went
for
2 hours and I'm like, call Haley, I can't do this anymore. She was working hard. Oh, bless her.
I know. There's no rest for anybody at a birth.
For anybody, And you were babysitting my daughter, I think, at some point. As well.
I know.
She was rebosing me.
Yeah.
My birth is just hilarious. As crazy as it was, yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess that's the thing. I mean, it depends. Our role is different at different stages of pregnancy and birth and postnatal. Like, I think I sort of see our role in pregnancy as to just develop a relationship and a rapport, to share information and help people navigate their way through the system and through all that decision making that you have to do in pregnancy, you know, when you like, will I have this test? Will I have that test? What will I do? What do I think about that? What do I want to do for my birth? And in the mainstream system, most people, I think, just get funneled through, this is what you're going to do. This is what's next. And it's very rare that people are really told or made aware, these are all your choices. This is actually not for me to tell you what to do. This is, I'm aware that I have all this knowledge and power. So I will share this with you. To the best of my ability, I'm aware of my biases and how I understand information. You know, I'm going to do my best to give you impartial information. And I'm here as a resource for you to make the decisions yourself about your body, your baby, your birth, you know. Mm-hmm. And then, in the labor and birth, look, the art and science of midwifery is, we are the medical person, but we are also holding the space, keeping a watchful eye. And it's the art of doing nothing really well, I think. It's more, the longer I'm a midwife, the more I'm like, you know, it's actually just about knowing when not, that most of the time don't do anything, you know, mutter some encouraging noises, let that birthing person know that they're not alone, that you're there, that everything's okay, they're fine, you know, be a reassuring presence. And then just bloody don't mess it up. Like, don't do shit to people all the time and derail
their
births.
Is that why you left the hospital and decided to?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Practice. Because the evidence is 100% supportive that, yep, giving birth under the care of a midwife essentially does provide the best outcomes, and that healthy women and babies can, you know, really have safe births at home with the lowest chance of interventions that they didn't need and, you know, really good outcomes. So it took me like probably 5 years after I graduated to get the confidence and to get the skills, like to really get a handle on, mm-hmm. you know, being able to do give stitches and things like that, so that I don't have to, someone doesn't have to go to hospital after a perfectly nice home birth just because I can't stitch them properly, things like that.
Yeah.
And then you have to achieve some extra qualifications and things as well to be able to work privately with a Medicare endorsement and insurance and stuff.
Right, because it's quite risky. I mean, I don't even know. Do you see this as quite risky? Because I know the insurances and things like that, like it's quite, I mean, it's a very bold move as far as I understand.
Yeah, yes. Well, financially, it's a bold move. I know some people just go, why do you do it? You know, mm-hmm. since 2010, there's no insurance for private midwives. And so, yeah, it's personally and financially risky because, I mean, A, people make mistakes. Every single human being can make a mistake, and that could be catastrophic in our world. Luckily, most of the time, birth is really normal, especially if you know, that's why we get to know you through pregnancy and really talk about your health history and all that sort of stuff. So you're getting a good sense of whether your birth is likely to be pretty straightforward. And also supporting women who do have health complexities who still want to birth at home. You know, some midwives will do that and some won't. You could make a mistake or you could not make a mistake, because sometimes, you know, shit happens as well. But if that means that a baby suffers some kind of brain injury or physical injury or, you know, dies or something happens to a woman or something, you know, that family needs to have access to compensation to, you know, help raise their baby or whatever's happening. And so we should be insured for the protection of our clients as well as the protection of us. And let me tell you, shit happens in hospitals all the time. Not like it's not like a car crash in there, but, you know, it's things happen because the more weird stuff you do to people in labor and birth, the more likely you are to make bad shit happen, you know. Mm-hmm. So you're actually more likely to have outcomes that aren't ideal, especially, you know, the absolute rise in birth trauma. So people's experience of giving birth is just really going down the toilet. So, you know, yeah, I've lost my train of thought, but really, I think okay. It is risky, but it shouldn't be. It's essentially, in a way, more risky to give birth in hospital. However, it'll always be safer for some people to give birth in hospital. That's for sure. I don't want to make blanket statements. Every situation is an individualized, complete picture, but it's cultural. It's really cultural that we have such small numbers of people giving birth at home in Australia, because the data, the evidence really just shows it's safe. It's much cheaper. It's not cheaper to you, unfortunately, because, again, Medicare funds
it's more expensive
everything.
To me.
It's horrendously expensive.
Yeah.
And actually that was probably a really big barrier to me to starting private practice was the funding stuff, because I'd worked in the public system for 10 years and I've never had to have money exchange hands with my clients in terms of providing their care, and I really think it's not equitable. Like, you know, working in big cities, I've worked with lots of families from all kinds of culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds. And, you know, I'm completely generalizing, but a lot of sort of immigrant families, especially in the early, they're not having home births, you know, but they should be able to, because they'll probably get better care and better outcomes.
Yeah, that's really sad, actually, because, well, to be honest with you, like, we're in Byron, right? So I moved to Byron at 27 weeks when I was pregnant with Eva. And I just randomly, like, I don't even remember. I think Anna Murray, like, I connected to some Anna, you know, to Anna, doula here, and I asked where the midwives, and I started researching and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I realized that it's already getting late. And so I checked, you know, the five midwives in this area who do home birth.
Yeah.
And so it happened, you know, I was lucky that I think you had availability, or like you slotted me into September or something to make availability.
Yeah.
And then there was another midwife, and we kind of talked on the phone, and he came for a visit, and String and I were kind of like, yeah, okay, let's do it, you know? And
yeah.
We were in an Airbnb that you visited us. It was all crazy.
Yeah.
looking for.
So, but what? Why did you decide to have a home birth? Like, what did? What attracted you to the idea in the first place? Was it just because you're in Byron and you were like,
no, oh, well, no,
we're
no.
in the heartland?
For me personally, I'm gonna do so. This is gonna be kind of part two to my.
Sure.
This will be part two because I'm gonna write my birth story and then I'm gonna record an episode which I'm gonna talk about it. But mostly it was because, you know, I was induced with my first birth. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. It was in a hospital. Mm-hmm. It was quite traumatic, you know, and I had the drugs and whatnot. She came naturally. But at the time, like home birth, it was just like a concept that was so, it was just scary to me. I was like, what?
Yeah.
You know, because I grew up in, like, everybody I knew gave birth at a hospital. My sister had two cesareans. Yeah. Like, I couldn't even talk to her about her pregnancy or her birth. 2 weeks ago, we were on the phone, and I was like, hey, do you talk to your girlfriends about birth? Like, how did your girlfriend give birth? She's like, how do I know? And I'm like, what?
Mm.
Like, to me now, when I meet women, when we talk about children, we share our birth stories because it's such a, you know, like, I'm so passionate and interested in birth and everything that comes with it and the rite of passage. And my sister's totally oblivious to it. I'm like, why am I interested in that? I was like, what? But she was totally disconnected from her birth and she had two cesareans and everything. So, you know, and then after that, I obviously, because I do feminine embodiment work and women's work in a way and embodiment as well. And so I knew, like, my coach, she had a home birth and she was one of these women in these stories that, you know, was seeing a midwife in a hospital and by 30 weeks something felt off. And so she's like, yeah, no, I'm out of the system, you know. The more I looked into birth and the more I realized I was just part of the system and of that bureaucracy and my decisions. Like, I think what you said, one of the biggest shifts for me was in this whole process that I want to thank you for was what you mentioned before is like, you just came there to support my choices and my wishes and my desires in birth. And I was like, what? Because last time with Zoe, I was told that I needed to do this. I needed to be induced because the risk of stillbirth and the numbers. And so I felt very disempowered in that sense, you know, and I didn't have a doula. And so I decided I'm going to do it differently. And I knew people directly who did give birth at home. The more I read about it, knowledge is power, the more confident I felt about doing it. And it took a bit of convincing with strength, but as soon as I gave him to read that chapter about the statistics, like, so if for all the women listening who want to do home birth, tell the men the numbers, tell your masculine men the numbers that it's as safe as the hospital. And once he got this, you know, we had a conversation in the car and he said, because I was also considering, you know, like, because it is an investment. And the more important thing, I think, here in Byron, there's actually a home birth program with the hospital, right, that is free. So we're talking about a few thousand dollars out of pocket to go with a private midwife like you. And, of course, like, you know, we talk about the doula and whatnot.
Yeah.
Or I could give birth within the hospital system that was free. And we made the decision to actually not do that because, and I'm not saying that everybody should because, obviously, you know, every woman has a different right to have a choice, but for me, I wanted to be out of it. I wanted to be out of the system. I wanted nobody else. Like what I read and heard in podcast episodes is like, when I hire you, Astra, you work for me pretty
That's
much.
Right.
And not for anybody else, you know?
Yeah.
So that it's was a full partnership. Shift. Yeah. Well, you said, well, what do you want? Well, here's the data. What do you want? And should we do that test and that test? And you just showed up, as I said, you know, in your outfits and we had wine and you know, Zoe was there. And so it's almost like at some points, I'll be honest, it felt like, is Astra actually a midwife or just a woman who comes to hang out with me? You know, I'm like, what's going on? It just felt like so strange to, you know, at some point I was like, because you just came and we, most of the time we just talked and every single appointment that you had with me, you just listened to the heartbeat, you checked my belly. And then you measured it and that was it. Like, I'm like, what is this real? Like, I have a baby inside, you know, but I had to trust the process and the process led me to, you know, having the birth that I had.
Hi, girlfriends. Sorry to interrupt. You're listening to the episode. But I quickly wanted to jump in and let you know that I have prepared something exciting for you. If you're interested in polarity, femininity, and how to embrace your feminine and how to attract primarily masculine men in your life, this announcement is going to be very useful for you, because I'm talking about my signature training. Like, how do I describe this experience? Because it's really an experience, you know. This is a signature training, my 1-hour webinar that I've put together, and it honestly, it's been through a few iterations in the last 2 years, but I feel like this is the best yet training of mine that didn't come from, you know, reading 2 books and 3 courses and like coming together in a copy paste thing that I now advise women to do. No, this has come from me, my own lived experience through my dating life and through finding and attracting the masculine man of my dreams and then marrying him and creating a family. This also came, yes, indeed, from a lot of research and learning and courses and coaches and oh my God, you name it. You know, it's been a journey of 5 years for me about that time. And also this has come from my clients. So the previous training, how is this different? If you've signed up for another training of mine, which was the Lie of Female Success, by the way, this is different because this is now coming through a distillation of my work one-on-one with women who I've helped get to that place where they're just attracting better men and they start attracting better masculine men and are on their way to actually to a relationship eventually. Not only masculine, but also masculine committed men. So if you are in a situation where you are attracting men that are less than desirable, let's say they're feminine men who don't want to lead, don't want to take charge, and men who are unavailable, then this training is for you. I will have to call this training How to Start Attracting Your Masculine Committed Men, basically in 30 days or less. And in this training, I will share with you some of the key things that I've learned throughout this journey that are helping. That's what my work with women is based on. So in this 60-minute training, you'll find the number one reason why you're still single and can't attract a committed masculine man. It's not what you think. How to break through the patterns of attracting unavailable or feminine men, as I said, and find your blind spot so you can attract the men you want. How to master the feminine masculine polarity so you start feeling taken care of, claimed, and finally be able to let go of control and uncover the lie of female success that's keeping you stuck, exhausted, and unfulfilled, which means in masculine energy all the time, so you can start living in freedom and joy and much, much more. So if you're interested, go to girlskill.com/webinar, sign up, and I can't wait for you to see this training and to let me know how it went. And by the way, there are no replays for this, so make sure you select the time that you can show up and be fully present. All right, I'm going to jump off and you continue listening to this episode.
I still don't know, like every time I ask you about your birth, Sastra, you tell me, oh, that was really quick. I couldn't make it. That was quick. And I'm like, shit, I'm the only woman. My birth is like freaking long.
Because the 5-day ones like make for a really arduous story to tell. They're not as exciting as going.
Yeah.
You know, but I've had a good run too, I have to say.
I want to hear about, well, maybe you can tell us 2 of your most memorable, I think, births. And I, look, I realized that my birth wasn't one of them.
Your birth was fantastic. I liked your birth a lot. I really enjoyed it. I mean, yeah. I don't go to work as a midwife either thinking, oh, okay, I'm going to be walking the toddler around the block for an hour, taking her to the beach. I am going to work, but I'm not even going to actually be at work.
Yeah.
No, I mean, look, every birth's got its rhythm. It's like, oh. Sorry, the animals are going off here because it's so rainy.
That's all right. Chickens farm animals. That's fine. Yeah, you have some background. Yeah, yeah, but yeah. So you've been at home like a private midwife for how long now?
3 years or three and a half years. Yeah.
What are some like? Tell me one story about your most memorable birth that
home births?
Totally blew your mind. Well, maybe I mean in general, like your a home.
Oh,
birth
there's so
or a
many.
Hospital.
Like. So many births have blown my mind. Okay, one that just springs to mind is was a hospital birth. So I've had the good fortune most of my career I worked in what's called caseload models, which some of your listeners might be familiar with, which is where in the hospital system you still get sort of allocated a midwife who's working with you the whole way through. And they have days off and, you know, have backup midwives and things like that. But essentially you have, so you're on call still even within the hospital system and go into hospital when your client goes into labor and you're with them one-on-one. So I did that for most of my career, a little stint in high-risk clinic and some other stints in sort of doing just general ward work. But mostly I did that. So I still got to know my clients quite well It's a similar model to the home birth model. So it's not at home. It's in the hospital. It's still really tied up with hospital policies and procedures and all that sort of stuff. But anyway, I was working with a family where they were both deaf. Oh, both parents were deaf. Yeah. They're a really lovely couple. It was their first baby, I think. And actually the woman also wore glasses, so she was vision impaired as well. But she had like a sign, you know, an interpreter who would come to appointments. And so I got to know them through.
Translate.
Yeah. And in labor, she took out her hearing aids and she took her glasses off, which I thought was so incredible and brave, especially someone having
this. Still hear you with the hearing aids or no?
No. Minimal.
Minimal.
So she just took everything out. And we had the woman there who was the interpreter anyway to be there if she needed her, which was great. But she didn't. She just took everything out, jumped in the birthing pool and had just the most incredible instinctive birth. She just dropped in and trusted herself completely and just birthed this baby and, you know, just caught the baby. It was just incredible. The other midwife and I were just like watching, just being like, oh, my God, this woman is just, you know, owning her birth. Incredible. It was just amazing. I don't know, it was something about it that she chose to even remove what sensory, I suppose, accessories that she had to support her with her hearing and her vision and just completely to kind of drop out. And yeah, that was a really memorable one. I told you about the butterfly.
Sometimes butterfly, octopus.
Oh, God. Look, there's just so many. Sometimes birth is the thing. Birth is like meaningful, it's hilarious, it's tragic sometimes, it's, you know, intense, it's, I mean, yeah, there's so many. I had one set of clients where he was a free diver, so he could hold his breath for really long periods of time,
yeah,
and he was supporting his partner birthing in the pool, and she didn't realize, but every time she had a big contraction, he was on the outside and she was sort of holding onto his body. And she would kind of grab him around the neck so hard through her contractions that she was actually pushing his face underwater. And he would just look at me and go, and then go down. And she was like, it was like, holy God, no idea. And then he would just like serenely just go underwater, just hold his breath for like a minute, and then come back up again. But I've never seen anyone be on poo patrol so dedicatedly. Like he would just go, but I'd be there with the poop scooper going, getting it out because he
poop patrol. Hold on, you mean like when she was having contractions or pushing?
Yeah, if there was any poop floating in the water, any of it, he was just like, "There's a bit." Like he was just like,
"That would be my husband, actually." Like his biggest fear is like feces and stuff.
Yeah. Well, because he was going face first into the pool every 2 minutes. Yeah, he was just like, "Yeah." So that was. I mean, I could talk all day about memorable births. Like, there's so many memorable births.
I'm still blown away by like your ability to go into like it's so intense, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's just fucking intense and you don't like, I don't know, I think like when I thought about, because I know some women talk about, my girlfriend was there, you know what, like personally me, I'm not sure if my girlfriend, when she calls me into birth, I guess maybe I'll consider, but when I think about the intensity of it,
yeah,
it's just like you have to like play with so many factors, you know, and every birth is different. So I'm just curious, as how do you manage all of that and trust the process and not get into the fear of, something, you know, because all we are in our minds, the fear is what if something goes wrong? But I guess your belief in birth as being just the natural process, and the more you do it, I guess the more confident you have in this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just experience, Anna, because like I don't have to believe that birth is a natural, normal thing, because there's so much evidence that just it is. It's not. I get edgy at births. I can get really like, oof. Like I said, it's the art and science. Like I like to be really thorough in the antenatal period. So during pregnancy, I like to really make sure I'm on top of everything. You know, I've got a really good handle on who this person is, what their relationship dynamics like, what their family's like, what their birthing history is, all the things that sort of, you know, how their health is, all the things that come into play, and that I've really, you know, have I missed anything? Have I talked to a doctor if I need to? Have I, you know, what does this person want? Have I sort of covered every base, I suppose? And then I have to get to a birth and just let go. And then it becomes the art of it, which is just, I just have to rest in the evidence, which says this is safe. If I do these things and I'm aware of these things and I just look to what I've learned and the experience that I have, and I just have to sit in it. And then I really trust my intuition a lot too. You know, sometimes at a birth, it's just like something is just not right here. And I just have to go, mm-hmm. I can't put my finger on what this is, but this is just 13 years of experience of seeing normal birth after normal birth after normal birth after normal birth. Now I can fit when it's not right, it's just not right. You know,
so what do you do in those cases? Yeah.
Well, at home, that's where I'd be recommending to transfer, which is hardly ever, I have to say. But when it is, I don't ignore it, because you can push the body and you can push a baby to and still get normal births quite often, you know, even when things are funky. But you don't want to be doing that at home in the middle of nowhere or half an hour from ambulance care or even half an hour from anywhere. You want to be doing that in a space where there are all those other supports in place in case the woman's body or the baby's just not handling it the way that you mm-hmm. hope that they will. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's partly why even when people transfer, more often than not, they still end up having a normal birth. But there's just a time and a place for medical yeah. care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
All yeah, right, but well, you do, I do get up. To a birth and just go, all right, well, here I am and I don't know when I'm leaving. I just have to get really zen about it and go.
It's so crazy. Like yeah. your week and your days are literally like, I know your phone is always on, you know, yeah. and you said like you had 3 births in the last week or 10 days, yeah. you know, like that's just so intense and so yeah. like unpredictable, really. Like how do you live your life? Like how do you fall into any sort of plan or schedule?
Yeah,
or
well, whatever? There's no, you don't get plans and schedules, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But you look, over time, you can just get used to working in this way and know mm-hmm. that, you know, this was a really busy month for me. I had 4 births, which is a full-time load. But normally I only take 2 or 3, which is also why when people like you pop up later on, I can go, you know, I can fit you in because I'm not actually full, which is good. And yeah, it's just the not knowing. Like it's only 4 days. You know, I think this year I will have had about 25 births. So that's not, you know, that's like 25 days of my life that I'm, or nights or whatever. But it's just not knowing when they're going to pop up. That's the
and how long they're going to be and
how long they're going to be.
Whether you're going to be babysitting the toddler yeah. or whatever.
And whether you're bloody in the mood to go to a birth that day. You know, sometimes I'm really not. I'm just like, I would be like, I'm in the worst mood, bloody no one better go into labor today because I'm just not in the mood for it. But then no one does. And honestly, when the phone rings and I know it's someone who's going into labor, who I've had this relationship with, I just get really pumped about it. I'm like, great, awesome, we're going to go and have a really nice birth, you know.
Oh my awesome. God. That's crazy.
I'm excited okay. to be a part of it.
Yeah, let's finish up with talking right. about my birth. And as you know, we did the debrief and everything.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, and we talked about everything pretty much.
Mm.
But I guess since, you know, this is a podcast and we're recording, just thinking, you know, because my birth was quite unexpected. It was a long labor and there were a few turning moments. You know, Haley and I discussed like those turning moments in my birth. I don't know. I'm just going to throw it out there and let you kind Go of talk it. About it, you know, in terms of maybe what was, you know, what was surprising for you or like how I handled it. Because I had a moment there, you know, like after the birth, I was like, holy shit, I can't believe this has happened. Not even I did it, but this has happened. And it happened to me because I was so, I wouldn't say I was traumatized, but I was like, wow, you know, I don't feel about it this way now. But I remember the most beautiful thing was after when we sat down and had a pizza moment. And it was so awesome. Yeah. We brought up, you know, like, I'm like, oh, bring rakia. You know, that's what we do. And is like Serbian moonshine and the wine. And
we were that stuff was hardcore.
Yeah. But again, like, you know, I had the most intense 21 hours and there were a few moments there that I was like ready for a hospital, ready for a cesarean, ready for anything. Like, get me the fuck out of here. And the pushing itself was like intense. Yeah. And you know what, Astra, because Haley filmed some parts of it and did took some photos.
Yeah.
So in preparation for these interviews, I actually went to a cafe, like Eva was sleeping. I was drinking my coffee at a coffee place and then I put my phone like under the table and was flipping through the photos and I actually watched the video And I was like, you know, I teared up a little bit without sound. I didn't want to hear anything.
Okay.
And I looked at this. I'm like, what's this? Yeah, that's not as bad. Like, you know, I was just, it was a woman. It was me in the bath with this rug on my forehead and stringing everyone. And I was just like, not even like, it wasn't traumatic. Like it was, I was like pushing and, you know, my body was, I was, you know, and so now when I look at it, I'm like, wow. Like, you know, we could put, because we talked about it. I had a moment and I was like, that's not what I see on Instagram. You know, they show me these beautiful, blissful births in the water. That's what I was preparing for. It was quick, whatever. My birth was not what I had expected, prepared for. Mm. And it was like super fucking intense, you know. And you told me, and I said, you know, it's my midwife and my doula who did it. And then both of you were like, no, like you did it, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, whatever comes to your mind, I guess, for the listeners, since they listen to my, well, hopefully to my birth story and then.
I look forward to listening to your birth story and your reflections. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that birth is, what can I say? It's always a paradox. You know, it's always, it's completely normal. So yeah, if you look at it with the sound off and you look at it from the outside, you go, ah, it's fine. It happens every day. Millions of people are doing it. There's billions of us on the planet. It's completely normal and uneventful, and yet it's completely bonkers and totally transformative. And I think the thing is, for basically everybody, it's a real reckoning. Like, it's a personal reckoning. At some point, everybody goes on a journey through their birth, whether it's quick and seems easy, or it seems like someone's ranting and railing and screaming and swearing, or other people are totally silent. You know, the birth that I was at recently, which I'd nearly missed, and I was in the next room because she was so quiet that her husband, he was with the other two kids in the next room, and I'd popped out to the veranda to eat my breakfast and was like, call me in when it gets intense, you know. And then it got intense so quickly, and she just said, I couldn't even speak. It was so intense, I couldn't even talk to tell anyone that the baby was coming out. And he just came into the room, got me, and went, she's sitting on the toilet making weird faces. And I was like, we all ran in there, and there was the baby coming out, sort of thing. Because some people just go in with that. Some people go out. Some people move around lots and thrash around, and other people do really rhythmical. I think it's just everybody's working their way through that intensity and through that process in the best way that they can. And, you know, I think we talked about this around your birth, but I've really come to believe very strongly, because I've worked with lots of women who have been super prepared, like you, really gone on a really big journey in their pregnancy. You know, some people are really shocked by birth because they don't want to know, or they're really just unprepared. Like, it doesn't matter how much you say to them, you know, this is going to be, you know, you might want to think about X, Y, Z. They're just checked out, and it's not till it happens that they're like, fuck, you know, get me an epidural immediately, because this is, you know. But people who are really like, okay, I know what's coming, you know, and I'm, you know, do the work around, you know, emotional resilience and getting some skills and strategies and things like that. But everybody has this moment where they just, it's that transition phase. Even when you're prepared, it's the baby getting born as well. And some, I've seen births go really off on a big tangent, where, you know, I think in some circles, and I think even women's tendency in themselves is to then blame themselves for my birth went wrong, or I ended up with a cesarean because X, Y, Z, or I ended up with forceps, or my baby was in this position because I sat weird in my pregnancy, or I did blah, 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 or I was emotionally stuck and I didn't release my baby well, and I'm not good at giving birth is the kind of vibe. But so I feel like I've been at probably 1,000, but I don't know how many births, but a lot of births. I think, you know what, that was the baby doing that one. That was the baby getting itself into that funky position that was just not budging out of. Or I just think that it's the woman and the baby dancing together through the birth, and it's your job. It's the first big surrender. You know, like, parenting asks a lot of you. You have to dig deep constantly being a parent to parent these little people and raise them for this extraordinarily long period of time into adults. I think birth is the first process of unmaking yourself and surrendering to whatever it is that this child brings you, then rebuilding yourself sort of on the other side together in this relationship with this person.
Yeah.
Does that sound too witchy-woo? Like, I Do you know what I mean? I think it's the baby as well. And so you're just doing the birth the best you can with the birth that you've got. And that's a really hard thing for people to cop when they're not having the birth that they wanted to have or that they thought they would have. But it's the birth that you get, the birth that you get, you know.
Right, yeah.
Unfortunately.
And it's like there's so many unknowns there, right? And it's the mystery of it. And what are the lessons? And I just find it fascinating how birth, you know, and when we talk about birth as the rite of passage and what is that teaching us and me and all of that. And it's, and you realize that it's just perfect in the way that, it is and supposed to be. And, you know, like I'm still digesting. And I think we talked with you, like, you know, you can be digesting your birth for many years, if not months, and you know what this means, and So, I mean, we're gonna finish up, Astrid, because we're gonna talk about it forever.
Yes,
but I think in our debrief, I asked this question of, because you know, with Haley, we also talked about birth not being just like this physical process of okay, you're actually giving birth, which in itself is like miraculous, but you also go on a whole emotional, mental like freaking journey. For me it was a journey, and I asked this question of like, what is that? I mean, obviously there's physical pain,
yes,
and the pain for, you know, whether we call it surges, waves, whatever, like it's so intense, it's undescribably intense. But then I was thinking, well, is that why women go through this emotional rite of passage? Because you can also break your leg, you know, or break your spine, or you can be in a situation, which I've never been, but you can be in a situation where the physical pain is extreme, but you don't go, you know, into this, like, I was calling my mother and a lot of grief and telling string, like, you did this to me, like, and just waiting, you know, like swearing, whatever. Yeah. And you told me something really powerful, and, you know, it stuck with me that you said that, you know, the cervix and the hips and that area, you know, pretty much of being a woman and having a vagina carries, you know, emotional weight. And there's something in there that you say, you know, a lot of women, that's an open, or how did you say that? I don't know. Like, to tell me.
I don't know how I said it.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's so just, I think there's something about the cervix in particular. Like, it's, look, to get really woo about it, you know, I think, I don't know, like I'm not an expert in these things, but it's just something that I've observed over the years and in connecting, I suppose, with my own experience of giving birth as well and listening to lots of birth stories over the years. And, yeah, there's just something about the cervix being this gateway. I think we're talking about it being a bit of a portal. Like, your cervix is always closed, you know, in your life. It's this tight muscle, you know, your series of muscles, the base of your uterus locked into the cervix. It's closed, and it really only opens like that. Thins, it completely transforms under the effects of hormones to thin and soften and stretch and be drawn up around a baby and let a baby come out of you, you know. And then it closes back down again and transforms back into the firm, you know, sort of seal to your center or something. And I think we were talking about the way sometimes people experience like very emotional asexual encounters, when if their cervix is really intensely stimulated in other ways, or even having a pap smear can make you feel like you want to cry, or, you know, having things sort of done to your cervix or that involve your cervix can really elicit like a very deep emotional response. And I think there's something about that, that this, it's this, I mean, that part of your body is literally breaking down and turning into something else and then reforming again. It gets pulled up into the body of the uterus and becomes sort of part of the uterus and then comes back down and out and becomes a cervix. I think it's partly that. It's the interplay between also just, the hormones compared to breaking a leg or having an accident or something that involves pain. It's a different type of pain.
It's a normal pain. That's what you're talking about.
It is a normal pain. Yeah. It is. And it's created by this amazing concoction of hormones. And I mean, hello, I think most of us are pretty familiar with what hormones can can do or not do for us over the course of our, you know, cycles and things like that. So we know they're very powerful, you know, emotional catalysts. So I just think it's all of that. It's the pain, it's the kind of, you know, shamanic journey in a way of going into the unknown. It's the not knowing where it will end. It's that personal journey. It's more like the pain of a marathon than the pain of breaking your legs, where you set out on this journey and you don't know when it's ending. You don't know if you've got enough in your backpack to get you there. But meanwhile, that you're just getting flooded with all of these drugs and hormones and completely going on a vision quest.
Well,
and coming out the other side with a baby.
It was definitely a vision quest for me. And I'm so happy I watched the video actually. And in the video, like after the baby was placed, I mean, I remember this. I couldn't even look at her for a few seconds because I just couldn't believe what just happened. And then my face was doing like these. I don't know. It's like so out there.
You weren't
there.
Back
like,
yet. You were totally out there. Yeah, you're gone. You're well gone.
I was gone a few times. And then to be on the other side of it all. And, you know, I remember I told String, look, like he actually told me, I think we should go for it because you're going to regret it. And then, you know, if I tell you no, because he was worried about making mess on the carpets during birth. Yeah. That was his biggest worry. But
yeah.
I told him, I said, look, if we do this and we do a home birth, what an amazing experience to have, you know, between you and me and our family. And then that moment after, you know, I gave birth and then again, we were sitting, I have pictures of this. We were sitting I was in bed with a baby nursing and everybody was around. We were having pizza and drinking this moonshine or whatever.
Yeah.
It was the most like amazing moment. And you, Astra, and Haley, you're now part of our family, you know? So I don't even know how to describe it. So I want to thank you for, you know, I know this is your job, but I know you're also doing this not because, you know, obviously you're not doing this for the money, but there's a bigger, you know, mission there So, and it's awesome. So I wanted to thank you for that and bring you to the podcast because I think, you know, women around the world are just they need to hear it, and I'm just such a big advocate for it now. Not, I mean, for home birth in general, but just birth being. I don't need to go to the hospital. Like, I'm not sick. You know, last time I went to do like I don't know, I had the routine. Like, I'm not sick. Leave me alone. You know, and so just awesome. So for all the women listening, Astra, what would be your message? Like, we're gonna end on this. For the women listening, I guess, who had births, who are preparing for birth, I think all kinds of women are going to listen to this. What is your message to women listening about, I guess, the process of, you know, pregnancy and birth and after?
Yeah. Well, I just want to preface it by saying thank you also. And it's an honor to have been part of your family for across these 9 months, I guess, that we spent together, really. And it gave me goosies when you were talking. Like I have that connection with you too. It's not like it's just my job, you know. It's always an honor and a privilege to be with a family through every birth. Ooh, got goosies again now. Yeah, I think my message to people listening is just that, you know, for all of this, birth is a really, it's a really normal life event for most people. It's just, it's actually super normal. You can be sitting around eating pizza right afterwards because it's great. It's powerful. It's full on. Sometimes it's easy, but it's definitely easier. Like, just understand from the start that you have choices. You've got choices. Go and talk to somebody and just explore your options. And just to really, it makes a difference, I think, to how you feel about yourself and how you feel about your birth and how you feel about parenting and how you feel about your sexuality and how you feel about everything that you do in life. You know, your birth affects all of those things. It's a big deal. So don't take it lightly, you know, and make the right choices for you. And they could be all kinds of different things. Home birth isn't for everybody, but you can still have your own midwife, even if you birth in a hospital. That's around in lots of different places and it's getting more and more. And if you've got the energy, you know, agitate for change because we've been, you know, Medicare's been reviewing this stuff for a couple of years now to make this widely available for every woman in Australia. That you should be able to access this kind of care for free, and that we should be able to go to a hospital with you if you need that, or, you know, wherever. Your midwife should accompany you to wherever is the right place for you to birth, not just for home birth. So, but we just need a bit more change to get that really happening. It's really big in Queensland. So if you live in Queensland, you probably will be able to find a midwife who can work with you no matter where you're choosing to give birth. Mm-hmm. And it's more and more coming through Victoria. It's coming. It's just if we had a bit more oomph, we could really get things moving a bit faster. Yeah. And then this would just be like the normal story. Someone gets pregnant and they go, oh, I'm just going to call the local midwife and then she can refer me to a doctor if I need a doctor, not the other way around, you know?
Yeah, beautiful. And so we've got a lot of listeners in the US.
Yeah, sure.
And I know in the US it's a completely different system, but I just want to tell all the listeners that the first book that I ever read about birth and all of that, somebody just recommended to me was Ina May Gaskin's Guide to Childbirth. And that's in the US.
Legend.
Right. Oh, yeah. So if you are in the US and you feel like you're in the system, like there's so many options, there's midwives there. Yeah. I mean, it's all over the, you know, the world, but knowing that there's that village in the US, I think it was in Texas or something, Tennessee.
Yeah, the
I can't remember.
Yeah.
And I've read those stories. I remember I was reading it. I was like, that is so amazing. So if you're not in Australia, which a lot of listeners are not, know that there midwives are everywhere, right? And you can get that kind of a support and care and it's your choice because you're the one birthing. So
And look at your options wherever you are. Like in the US, there's an amazing obstetrician. I can't think of his name. It might be Lawrence Fishburne or something like that. He's an obstetrician who attends home births for breeches and twins. Mm. And, you know, we don't have that here. There's a lot. Whilst the US system's quite medicalized, there's also from state to state lots of really great stuff happening. Right. So I guess wherever you are, don't take the status quo as, you know, your only option. There's more options and explore them fully so you don't regret it, you know.
Yeah, this time, second time around, I was so much more in power, you know, and I always tell women, okay, go to another host, ask somebody else, get another opinion, get a doula. Yes. You know, doula was like, oh, my God, you know. I mean, especially if, you know, a toddler is running around or whatever. So,
yeah,
I was just so much more prepared and empowered and knowing the data and, you know, like you can always make a different choice and not feel like you have you have to do things that you don't want to do. So,
yes.
All right, Aster. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, nice chatting with you.
Thank you. So for everybody listening, if they're in Australia, I mean, I know you're a practicing midwife here in Byron, but I know you have a website and I know you have Instagram. And so for everybody listening, if you want to direct them anywhere or if anybody wants to get in touch, just let us know where they can find you.
Well, if you just look up Astra Joint, J-O-Y-N-T, it's your midwife, Astra Joint. Dr. Joint, no. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, and I've got a website as well. And I did just start a blog not long ago because I feel like just writing some of this stuff, getting it out there as well. So, and that's on my website as well.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we're going to link it to everything in the show notes. All right, Astra, thank you so much. We'll chat soon.
Love to Zoe and Eva.
I will pass it on. Okay.
Alrighty.
All right, girlfriends, hope you enjoyed listening or watching to this episode. And if you did, and if you resonate with most of the things I'm saying, and you want to learn more and you want to finally start attracting masculine men, I have an invitation for you. So, as you know, I am committed and passionate about helping successful women attract and keep committed masculine men. So, I have a personal invitation for you. If you're resonating with everything and you're ready to step up and invest in yourself and take things to the next level, I would love, love, love to talk to you and see if you would be a fit for my work and what I do. And so basically what I'm doing is I'm inviting you, and it's a personal invitation if you resonate, because I don't work with everyone and I'm not here to just, you know, make a quick buck and whatever. I'm here committed to your result, and I will make sure that we go until the end and that we get you the result that you want, which is start attracting better men. So I invite you to sign up to actually apply for a free discovery call with me. It's a call that is 1 hour long. And what we do is we talk about your current situation, where you are today, and what's wrong, quote unquote, wrong with your dynamics with men, what you don't like. And then we're going to talk about what you really want and where you want to get. And at the end, if I find that that's a good fit, I'll tell you what I do and I'll offer you to join us and how we could work together. So just to give you a bit of context, this experience is all about, and what I'm going to offer to only if I find that that's a good fit, is about, number one, putting yourself in the best position to start attracting committed masculine men, and not through tactics and techniques or tips, tricks, whatever, but just by being you and understanding and appreciating men, thus creating a deeper relationship with yourself as a feminine essence woman and attract better committed masculine men. Number two, it's all about letting go of overworking perfectionism and the need to control by overcoming your limiting beliefs, patterns, and obstacles to rediscover your worth and enoughness, and rebuilding your faith in your own voice and your own decisions, and exploring your boundaries, and so on and so on. Number three, it's all about letting your body lead, stop overthinking, and start trusting your gut and your heart when it comes to making decisions, expanding and embracing your range of emotions, cultivating sense of awareness and pleasure, and feeling more without apologizing for it. And I know if you're here, you understand and you know that the path to your masculine man, who's a conscious, healthy man, is through you. It's through embracing your feminine nature. It's through running with the wolves and embracing your wild feminine side and actually gaining power from it. And a healthy masculine man will only be attracted to that if you get to that place yourself. And last but not least, it's all about becoming deeply connected to yourself as a woman. Understand what true femininity is, exploring deeper levels of intimacy, and finally becoming free, lighter, and open. Embracing basically the feminine side of polarity, because again, this is what your masculine man wants. It's all about stop living in the masculine energy by pushing, doing, and choosing all the time, and start living, enjoy freedom and your wild nature, where you can surrender, where you can finally let go. Trust me, this is an amazing place to be, and it's easy and joyful, and it feels natural and feels like a woman. So if you resonate, go to girlskill.com/apply, and there's going to be a short survey. Step one, just apply there, and then the next step is to schedule a call with me. It's going to be an hour. We have fun on this call, so I hope to see you there. And my calendar is booked for another, my calendar is open for another week. So go ahead and do that. If you don't see times that are available for you, make sure you email me, because I'll always make time for you to make sure that you get your spot. All right, girlfriend, keep running with the wolves, and I'll see you next week. Okay, bye.